Welcome to The Debate. It is February 6th, 2026. If you're listening to this, chances are you spent your morning staring at a dashboard just full of red alerts, or maybe arguing with a product owner about why a specific patch can't wait until the next sprint. The cybersecurity landscape right now is, well, let's just call it high volume. We are absolutely drowning in vulnerability data. I mean, we have scanners finding thousands of bugs, databases overflowing with CVEs, and yet as an industry, we still really struggle to tell a coherent story about actual business risk to the people who sign the checks.
It's the classic signal-to-noise problem, isn't it? It's amplified now by AI-driven fuzzing and automated exploit generation. It's just louder than it's ever been.
Exactly. And today we're tackling the fundamental tension in how we even try to organize that noise. It's the conflict, or, you know, maybe the necessary evolution between the granular technical world of the common weakness enumeration, the CWE, and this emerging strategic framework of top-level cyber threat clusters, or TLCTC.
It's good to be here, and I think conflict is the right word. We're seeing a massive push in the industry right now to abstract everything away. The idea is to take these complex, specific coding errors and just lump them into broad buckets to make security intelligible for the board. But my fear, and this is the position I'll be defending today, is that in our rush to simplify, we are losing the technical precision that's required to actually fix the problem. You can't patch a concept, and you certainly can't patch a cluster.
And that is exactly where we disagree. I'm representing the position that context is king. I believe that listing thousands of technical bugs is, frankly, useless without a strategic overlay that explains the attack vector and the responsibility sphere. I believe TLCT is the necessary framework to move us from asking what is wrong with the code to asking how and where the attack originates.
And I'm here representing the engineer on the ground. I represent technical precision. To me, the specific definition of a weakness, the CWE, is the gold standard for remediation. I worry that these high-level abstractions like TLCT, while they look pretty for executives, might actually obscure the root cause of software failures. I mean, if I tell a developer to fix the cluster, they're going to laugh me out of the room.
Then let's get right into it. I want to start with what I call the dictionary problem. We have the CWE. It is a massive, comprehensive list of everything that can possibly go wrong in software. It's an incredible intellectual achievement. But it's a dictionary. It defines words. It doesn't write sentences. It doesn't tell a story.
But you need a dictionary to write a sentence. If we don't have these agreed upon definitions for things like a buffer copy without checking size or an improper neutralization of input, then we're all just pointing and grunting at code. We need a shared language to even begin the conversation.
We need a shared language. Yes, I agree. But let's look at the limitations of that language when it's used in isolation. Take a classic example from the source material, CWE 787, the out-of-bounds write. If I tell you, hey, we have a CWE 787 in the system, what do you actually know about the strategic risk?
Well, I know quite a bit, actually. I know that the software is writing data past the end or, you know, before the beginning of the intended buffer. I know memory is being corrupted. That's a critical severity issue. It usually leads to a crash or worse, remote code execution. That tells me I need to stop the build.
You know what is happening technically inside the memory stack, but do you know how to stop the attack vector? Do you know the strategy? See, this is the core TLCTC thesis. CWE defines the what, TLCTC defines the how. If that CW787 is in the server-side code, processing an incoming request, that is TLCTC number two, exploiting server. But if that same exact bug is in a client's PDF reader processing a response, well, that's TLCTC number three, exploiting client.
Okay, but the fix is the same. You go into the C++ code, you find the pointer arithmetic, and you add bounds checking. The compiler doesn't care if it's a server or client, the bug is the bug.
The code fix is the same, but the defense strategy is entirely different. And that's the nuance we miss when we just stare at the CWE. If it's TLTCT number two, my server is exposed. I need a WAF, I need server-side hardening, I need to look at my ingress filtering and maybe my cloud architecture. If it's TLTCT number three, I need to worry about endpoint protection on user devices, or maybe I need to look at how I'm sanitizing outgoing documents to prevent my clients from getting popped. Without mapping that weakness to its execution role, server versus client, we cannot build effective defensive strategies. Or just playing whack-a-mole with bugs.
I see where you're going, I do, but I maintain that for the developer, the person actually doing the work, that distinction is academic. Precision is the only thing that matters in implementation. A developer can't fix a cluster. If you tell a developer you have an exploiting server flaw, they'll just look at you blankly. They need to know, is it a heap overflow? Is it a stack smash? Is it a format string vulnerability?
They need both. They need the granularity to fix the line of code. But the architect needs the cluster to fix the system.
Perhaps. But let's defend the dictionary for a moment. The MIT CWE dictionary is essentially the periodic table of security elements. You want to collapse things into 10 broad categories, fine. But the real nuance lies in the specific language families. A buffer overflow in C is very different from a deserialization issue in Java, which is completely different from a pickle exploit in Python.
But functionally, from an attacker's perspective, are they all that different? The attacker is just looking for an entry point.
Absolutely, they're different. Operationally, they are worlds apart. You mentioned TLCT number 2, exploiting server. That bucket is enormous. It contains SQL injection, buffer overflows, command injection. Those require completely different skill sets to fix. Grouping them together might help a CISO make a slide deck, sure, but it's dangerous for engineers who need to know exactly what broke. It just oversimplifies the complexity of modern software.
I'm not suggesting we delete the CWEs. I'm suggesting they are raw data that needs processing. And the source material brings up an interesting point about the status of CWEs. You rely on them as the gold standard, but the documentation notes that in the full dictionary, only a very small percentage, what was it, something like 40 or 50 out of 1,300 entries, are officially marked as stable.
That's a bureaucratic label, not a technical indictment. Just because a definition is evolving or marks draft or incomplete doesn't mean the vulnerability isn't real. It just means the taxonomy is complex and software changes fast. I mean, we invent new ways to break things every week.
Or it means the taxonomy is a mess. It implies that trying to map the world one-to-one against 1,300 shifting definitions is a fool's errand. The whole stable versus draft issue highlights that we are getting lost in the weeds. We need a stable layer above it. Just because a definition of a specific hardware race condition is draft doesn't change the fact that strategically it's a TLCT C number 8 physical attack of using timing. We need to be able to classify the threat, even if we can't perfectly name the bug yet.
Okay, let's talk about that mapping then, because this is where the rubber meets the road. The source material explicitly admits that a one-to-one mapping between CWE and TC-LTC is impossible without context.
Exactly. That is the feature, not the bug.
Well, if it requires manual context to work, isn't it just adding administrative overhead? You're asking analysts, who are already completely burned out, to sit there and decide, is this server or client for every single bug? That doesn't scale.
It's not overhead. It is critical analysis. If you can't answer, is this server or client, then you don't understand the risk you are accepting. The framework forces you to stop and think. Let's look at the distinction between TLCT number 1, abuse of functions, and clusters 2 or 3. This is vital. In number 1, the inputs are data. No foreign code executes. You're just misusing the intended logic. In number 2 and 3, bugs allow foreign code execution.
Sure, logic flaws versus code flaws. We've known this for years.
But we haven't operationalized it. Take CWE 514, covert channel. It's an abstract class. It's like a ghost in the machine. In the CWE dictionary, it just sits there, confusing everyone. But strategically, looking at the TLCTC mapping, it almost always maps to number 8, physical attack, because it abuses physical properties like power consumption or timing. Without that map, a defender might treat it like a software logic bug and try to patch the code when really they need to be looking at the hardware voltage regulation. The mapping forces the cause side question.
I will grant you that CWE 514 is a tricky one, but let's look at the mapping logic provided in the source. It says, if the bug is in a web server module, Number 2, exploiting server. If the bug is in a PDF reader, number 3, exploiting client. My argument is that the CWE usually implies the context. You don't get a SQL injection, a CWE89, in a PDF reader. You don't get cross-site scripting, CW79, in a back-end C++ kernel module. The dictionary does provide the context if you know how to read it.
If you know how to read it, that's the problem. You're relying on tribal knowledge. SQLi is usually server, yes, but what about deserialization? That can be server number 2 or client number 3. What about buffer overflows? That can be anywhere. The source makes it clear. A flat table yields very little insight without the execution role. We need to formalize that context so that automated systems, not just gray-bearded experts, can make decisions.
Let's shift gears to how this applies to actual incidents, because theory is great, but we all remember 2020. The source material discusses the SolarWinds Sunburst attack in detail, specifically using the TLCTC JSON architecture.
Ah, this is my favorite part of the framework. The JSON architecture separates the static definitions, the framework itself, from the dynamic intelligence of the specific attack. It allows us to tell the story of SolarWinds in a way that is machine-readable, but also strategically coherent.
I looked at that JSON schema. It is extensive. You have responsibility spheres, velocity classes, data risk events. It feels over-engineered. Specifically, I want to challenge you on these responsibility spheres. You have tags for at org, at vendor, at customer. Does this actually help security, or is it just a way to shift blame? You know, oh, that was in the at vendor sphere, not my problem.
It is absolutely not about shifting blame. It's about defining liability and forensics. In a modern supply chain attack, you had to know when the ball crossed the line. It's like a chain of custody in a criminal investigation. Let's walk through the SolarWinds chain as described in the source. It didn't start at the victim organizations. It started with TLCTC number 10 supply chain, specifically the compromise of the build environment at SolarWinds,
which allowed them to inject the malicious code.
Right. Then that led to TLCTC number 7, malware, the backdoor in the DLL itself. And here is the critical moment. It crossed a responsibility sphere boundary. It went from at vendor, SolarWinds, to at org, the victim, via legitimate updates.
Right, the update mechanism, the trusted channel.
Once inside the at org sphere, it resulted in TLCTT number 4, identity theft, stealing admin credentials. And finally, it ended with TLCTT number 1, abuse of functions, using those legitimate admin tools for lateral movement. If you just list the CWEs involved, you miss the movement. You miss the fact that the attack jumped spheres. The sphere definition is vital for legal liability. If the breach happens in the ad vendor sphere, that's a different contract clause than if it happens in the at org sphere.
I could see the legal utility. It creates a clear demarcation line. But looking at that chain 10 to 7 to 4 to 1, it highlights something else the source mentions, the dual nature of credentials. In the JSON, step 6 is marked as number 4 identity theft, but the source notes that credential acquisition usually happens via another cluster.
Correct. You acquire credentials via number 9, social engineering, or number 2, exploiting server, or in this case, number 7, malware dumping memory. But the use of those credentials, that is always number 4.
It's a useful distinction. But I worry that by labeling the SolarWinds attack as a number 10 supply chain incident, we ignore the fact that it was ultimately a code failure at SolarWinds. I mean, someone, somewhere, allowed code modification. That's an integrity failure. That's a CWE. When we say it was a number 10, it feels like we're treating it as an act of God rather than a failure of controls. Not at all. Number 10 tells us where the trust was broken. It tells us that we implicitly trusted the build pipeline. If we label it just integrity violation, we might look for a file permission error. By labeling it number 10, we know we need to look at the CI/CD pipeline, the signing keys, the vendor vetting. It points to the strategic remediation.
Let's talk about another metric in that JSON that caught my eye, attack velocity or delta T. The source categorizes attacks from VC1, strategic, taking days, all the way to VC4, real-time, in milliseconds.
This is, in my opinion, the most accurate predictor of sophistication we have, and the most ignored.
Is it, or is it just a fancy stopwatch? Does knowing the velocity class actually change how I operate my SOC? If I get an alert, I respond. Does it matter if it happened in 5 minutes or 5 minutes?
Oh, it changes everything. If the transition from one cluster to another, say from number 9 social engineering to number 4 identity theft, takes 15 minutes, that's VC3. You have time for a SemAlert. You have time for an analyst to look at a screen and say, hey, that login looks weird. But if the velocity is VC4 milliseconds, human response is structurally insufficient. You cannot process your way out of a VC4 attack.
So what's the alternative? We can't just give up on fast attacks?
Architecture, circuit breakers. If an API starts dumping data at a rate that is physically impossible for a human user, the system must self-terminate the connection. No human analyst can catch that. The source makes this clear. If the attack is VC4 and you are relying on a SOC, you have already lost. You need secure by design limitations that operate at machine speed.
That implies we can design away these problems, which brings us to the Secure Software Development Lifecycle, or SSDLC. The source material claims that all 10 clusters apply at the design phase.
They do. Every single one.
Come on. I'm a software architect. I'm designing a web app for a bookstore. How does TLTC number 8, physical attack, apply to me? I'm writing Java code. I'm not building a fence. I'm not hiring guards.
You're writing Java code that runs somewhere. The source logic is inescapable here. As the architect, you must decide, do I trust the physical security of my cloud provider? That is a number 8 design decision. If you're deploying to a tier 4 data center, you accept the risk is low. If you're deploying to a server in a closet in a branch office, the risk is high. You might need to design data at rest encryption differently based on that number 8 decision. You are making a physical security choice whether you realize it or not.
Okay, fair enough on the cloud provider. I can accept that. Infrastructure is code these days. But what about number 9, social engineering? The document says we need to address that in the design phase too. Can you really design away human gullibility? Users will click links. That's a law of nature.
You can't fix the human, but you can fix the interface. The source argues that you design UI/UX that prevents manipulation. For example, cooling off periods. If a user tries to change their banking password and wire $10,000 immediately, don't just let them. Force a delay. Force a confirmation dialog that breaks the urgency loop of a phishing attack.
So you're saying we treat the human element as a vulnerability in the system that needs a patch?
Precisely. You must assume the human element is a vulnerability. If your design relies on the user never making a mistake, your design is fundamentally flawed. And this is the difference between number 1, abuse of functions, and the implementation clusters. Design determines the function, that's number 1. Implementation determines the code quality, that's number 2.
I want to drill into that distinction, number 1 versus number 2, because I think it's the most confusing part for developers. The source says number 1 is abuse of functions, where logic is misused, and number 2 is exploiting server, where code is broken. But if I have a logic flaw in my server code, isn't that just code that is broken?
It's subtle, but it's vital. And number 2, the code is doing something it was never intended to do, like overflowing a buffer or executing a SQL command that was injected. The code is broken. And number 1, the code is doing exactly what it was written to do, transfer money from A to B, reset password. But the context is malicious. The attacker is using a legitimate feature, password reset, to take over an account. There is no bug in the code syntax. The bug is in the business logic rules.
So number 2 is a syntax or implementation error, and number 1 is a requirement or a design error.
Generally, yes. And that dictates who fixes it. Number 2 is for the junior dev to fix with input validation. Number 1 requires the product owner and the senior architect to rethink how the feature works entirely.
I can accept that distinction. It's useful. But I still come back to my primary concern. We're building this massive cathedral of theory clusters, spears, velocity.
JSON schemas. It's impressive intellectual work, but at the end of the day, the SolarWinds breach happened because of a specific file weakness. The Equifax breach happened because of a specific Struts vulnerability. If we spend all our time admiring the strategy, do we lose the grit required to find that one specific needle in the haystack?
That is the risk, I grant you. If TLCT becomes an excuse to ignore the details, we fail. But I would argue the opposite is true today. We are so focused on the needles that we don't realize the haystack is on fire. We're patching CVEs while our architecture is fundamentally broken. We're fixing buffer overflows in systems that shouldn't be exposed to the internet in the first place.
So where does that leave us?
It leaves us with a need for convergence.
Right. I'll summarize my take on this. I will acknowledge that TLTC provides a very useful strategic overlay. The JSON structure, especially those responsibility spheres, is impressive for forensics and sharing intel. It standardizes the who and where in a way we haven't had before, but I maintain that we cannot lose sight of the what. CWE remains the indispensable dictionary. Without the granular technical details of the specific vulnerability, the specific CVE, the specific memory offset, the high-level cluster is too vague to patch. You can't deploy a patch to cluster number 2. You deploy a patch to server.c on line 405.
And I agree with you on the necessity of the dictionary. CWE is the dictionary. But I will reaffirm that TLCTC is the grammar that makes the sentence readable. Secured by Design has failed us for 2 decades because we focus on checkbox compliance, did we scan for the top 10 CWEs, rather than cause-oriented threat modeling. We must stop confusing the result, data loss, with the cause, the cluster. Only by understanding the how, the cluster, and the where, the sphere, can we actually break the attack chain. If we just fix the bug, the attacker will find another bug in the same cluster. If we close the cluster, we stop the attacker.
So use CWE to fix the code and use TLCTC to fix the architecture.
Exactly. They are complementary, not mutually exclusive.
I can live with that compromise, though I'll still be the one obsessing over the diff logs while you're looking at your sphere maps.
And I'll be the one telling you which logs actually matter. That brings us to the end of today's debate. We hope this discussion encourages you to look at your own risk registers a little differently. Don't just ask what is wrong. Ask how does this happen and where does it come from?
And maybe, just maybe, fix the code while you're at it.
Thank you for listening to The Debate.
Goodbye.